You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Game Day Eve, everybody.
I thought you just said Happy Game Day.
Oh, you were worried?
I was excited because, you know, the Bills play tomorrow. But
you're like, if that's tomorrow, though.
Yeah, I was also like, what happened to Wednesday? Where did Wednesday go?
Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Of course, with it being Game Day Eve, and I did see Sal Capaccio tweeted it as well. We will hear Sal and Sean McDermott's interview coming up in just about 45 minutes here in hour number one. We will hear then from Sal at 11. We'll also get a look at the weather down in Miami with Patrick Hammer in about an hour and a half at 11:30. So we got a packed day today. I will say, though, I was driving in this morning. I got here a little bit earlier, so I was more just hanging out in my car and listening to Jeremy and Joe. And Jeremy bringing up today being 9/11, of course, and bringing up that both you and Joe were very young. Josh, maybe you were in the same age bracket here, and, yeah. And you were saying, like, you kind of have a recollection,
literally
a little bit.
An image in my head of looking at the TV and also remembering, like, wanting to play with my dad because I'm, like, 2 or 3 years old.
Yep.
And he's just like, not right now, like, something's going on.
Yeah, and we're watching the news.
Yeah.
And as a kid, you're like, it's like, the news, man.
Who cares? It's the news. Yeah. Like, you're a three-year-old. You don't have the comprehension yet, obviously. Like,
yep.
You know, but it is, you know, as the one caller put it, a day that'll live in infamy. One of those,
oh, yeah.
One of those days in world history, not just American history, that will always be remembered.
Yep.
For just everything that happened on the day and everything that's happened since, in a sort of domino effect, if you will.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it's hard. Like, it's a hard thing. Even though I was only 3 years old, it's still, you know, makes me emotional thinking
lot
about
of
it.
The rest of your life has been set up by that moment.
Right.
I mean, I still, you know, just kind of more been, you know, lighthearted thing. Ever going to an airport, traveling with anyone older than like 35 is like, oh, remember when this was easier?
Right.
Or you watch a rom-com movie and you're like, yeah, when like they actually go to the gate with the person.
Right.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
You're seeing old movies when people would run all the way to a gate. I mean...
Home Alone.
Yeah.
Home
Alone is probably one of the best examples of that, where it's, you know, there's...
To us, that's basically fiction, but in reality, that was...
Right.
And it's the reality. It's a little thing, but yeah, like, our lives have drastically changed. We barely even realize it, because we're both... I think I'm a year older than you.
Mm-hmm.
I was 4 at the time. I have no memories of it. I think I was in preschool early, you know, kind of like the daycare. I don't remember anything.
Like I said, my memory is... It's very vague. It's not like I'm remembering key parts of the day or anything. It's like a 2-second blip.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you've ever made it down to New York City at the memorial and everything, but
I did want to bring up. I did
back in college, and unfortunately I didn't get there when it was open, right? Like, we were on a, you know, kind of a weekend sort of trip, me and some of friends, for a radio conference, because we were all in the college radio station. We were all down there. And when the conferences were done, we had kind of the evening and afternoon to do what we wanted. And we were trying to explore New York City, do a bunch of different stuff, and we ended up getting to the 9/11 memorial after close. But you can still walk around the area and everything. And the fountains were off because it was nighttime, everything was closed. But just being in that square, if you want to call it that,
it hits you.
I can't describe it. It's
that's the feeling I got. Yeah,
and quiet. Even though it's New York City and it's always loud, that area is somehow dead silent.
Yep. It was maybe 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy at the time was living in New Jersey, and you know, I hadn't seen him in a while, so I went to go visit him over 4th of July weekend. And so I'm hanging out with him and his girlfriend, and you know, we decided to take a trip into the city. And it just so happens that, like, we kind of made our way over there as we're, you know, kind of doing sightseeing and getting food and everything like that. And it just, you're right, like, as you kind of got there, the city all of a sudden went from, you know, very loud, and it, you know, kind of has that the aura of the city that never sleeps. And yeah, I would say it was around 2-3 in the afternoon or whatever, and it was just, you know, dead quiet over there. And it was, that was a very interesting moment in my life, like going there and everything like that. I've never seen the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. I've heard that's a very similar experience where it's just, in a way, almost haunting. That's kind of the feeling I got from it. And as somebody that never, you know, you were 3, I was 4 years old. It's the first, you know, historical event we've ever lived through. But, you know, it's the quote-unquote lived. We don't have real memories of it. I know Jeremy also was mentioning the Challenger explosion. I know there are hundreds of people that share the story of they were sitting in an elementary school classroom and, you know, teachers were wheeling in a TV to watch it because, well, you know, I believe she was like the teacher of the year. She got to go up in the Challenger. Like this, it was a really cool moment, and especially, you know, the Challenger, at least I could be remembering this wrong, but kind of was leading up to, you know, space travel is becoming more and more sort of not regulated, but like a school teacher could go up there rather than, you know, right, test pilots and stuff like that.
You don't have to be someone that's part of NASA anymore. Yeah. You can just be Joe Schmo that won a contest.
Yeah, and sure, they'll train you, but here you go. And, you know, that moment, I know for a lot of people is sort of like a linchpin moment in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's just I would have felt awful if we had just moved past it, especially for, you know, me and you. You know, we easily could have. We don't have the memories of it.
Right. Well,
and I didn't want to do that.
Also for me, my dad is a volunteer fireman, mm-hmm. so it does kind of hit close to home there too, in that sense of just knowing what you can never understand what mm-hmm. those families have gone through.
Yep,
obviously, but understanding or trying to understand that feeling that you go through, it does kind of resonate with me a little bit more in that sense too. And I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, I know how you feel, because I would never ever try to, you know, be that way, because that's incomprehensible for me. But, you know, it's an interesting day. I don't really know how to describe it.
I heard Joe talking about it too when I was driving in, the idea of like watching documentaries or even like that whole 4-hour newscast. I've never mm-hmm. done that. I've watched the documentaries, of course, but in terms of the newscast, nothing's going on tonight. I kind of want to check that out.
There's one documentary that I remember I watched in high school, and it was these two French guys. I can't remember the name of them. I can't remember the name of the documentary. I hope I can find it tonight. But they were in America following around a New York City fire department, mm-hmm. like one specific station.
Yep.
And it just so happened that it started... Their filming started, I think, a week before 9/11.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they were doing filming on documentaries about something with fire companies in America. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. Like I said, I hope I can find it later to rewatch it. But, you know, that was a crazy documentary for me to watch, because it's like, you have to, I hope I can look it up in a break here, but you have to watch it, because they're literally at the station that's like 5 blocks away
mm-hmm.
from the World Trade Center, and they happen to be on the street when it all started happening and filming.
Yeah.
And so they catch it as it's happening. Just a live reaction. And I know there's, you know, there's quite a few videos from TV cameras and things like that, but this one just feels so raw, and, you know, it's not like a news camera. It's just two guys trying to make a movie, mm-hmm. and it's very in the moment. It's very, you know,
it's very raw.
Yeah.
Very raw.
Yeah.
And those are some of the things that will captivate me the most, is just the very raw footage, you know, not the dramatization of it or anything like that. Like, just boom, here you go. And I think that's also why, again, Joe brought up those ideas of going on YouTube and finding like the 4-hour broadcast newscast of that morning. I want to check that out, because I find that stuff really fascinating to watch.
I found it in like a 2-second Google search. It's the Nadeau brothers, NAUDET 9/11 documentary. And if anyone wants to check it out, mm-hmm. that's the one that I watched, and, you know, it's I highly recommend it. It's very good. You can find it on YouTube. I think this is the full thing. It's 2 hours long, so I'm assuming
it feels like the full thing.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Still think about how basically every broadcast was there when the second plane hit the second tower.
Yeah, because everyone gets alerted to the first one, and you have everyone.
It's a huge news story.
People
there,
thought
regardless.
It was an accident, and then once they saw the second one, they're like, "Okay, this is on purpose. This is real bad."
And I think that's the thing too. That's something I want to watch and kind of grasp as well, as just how it went from a traditional, hey, this is big news. It's going to be big news. I mean, one of the towers has been hit. You know, is it an accident? That alone is going to be a massive story. And to see, I mean, these clips I have seen of people reacting to the second tower being hit always just kind of gives me goosebumps a little bit. Because you do wonder, too, like, how would I handle that in that moment? I remember taking journalism classes and this being a talking point of, like, you know, be honest with yourself. Don't give yourself superpowers in this. And, oh, I would handle it super professionally. Be honest with yourself. How would you handle that? And I've always, you know, wondered that. It wasn't like a thing that we all sat down and talked about. It was more we thought about. And, yeah, I don't know how I would handle it. I mean, Josh, me and you have been on air a number of times for big breaking news stuff. You know, the Stephon Diggs trade, of course. And that goes its own way. But that you can almost kind of have fun with, right?
Right. It's a sports story. It's a lot more lighthearted.
You may be sad because one of your favorite players is going or
it's a shock for sure, but it's nothing like something.
You know, a developing tragedy.
Right.
That's
exactly.
It's a different thing. And that's always something that's captivated me is how people were reacting on television, on radio, what have you, as it was happening. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump in and share your stories on that day, which you remember, the years following as well. We've got a little bit of a window here, but we're going to go to John here. John, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing? All right.
Doing very well.
Doing good.
I've been working in network television since 1989, and I remember when NBC had the NBA coverage, and the Knicks were good back in the day. I would go up on top of the World Trade Center because they used to have a bank of payphones up there, and I would always call my mother on Mother's Day from the top of the Trade Center, which was quite an experience. Now, several years later, on 9/11. I was working for CBS covering football on Sundays, and then I would go to the Monday night site for ABC when Monday Night Football was on ABC. And we were in New York on that Sunday, and we just happened to take a glimpse of the towers and thought how cool those buildings were. Then we went to Denver, and of course the Giants were playing the Broncos that night, and I still firmly believe that thankfully the Giants were playing that night because that area down by the Trade Center, was a financial district, and a lot of people came in late that day for work because the Giants were playing the night before. But anyway, we were stuck in Denver, and we ended up driving home from Denver the morning of 9/11, and I drove all the way through from Denver, and I made it back to my home here in Dunkirk, and of course, this is a day I'll never forget.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Thanks for the call, man. And they played September 10th against the Denver Broncos. They lose 31-20. And then I know Jeremy brought up that games were moved like a full week.
The whole NFL season was moved.
Yep.
The whole week.
And their next game is not till September 23rd.
Yeah.
In which they play the Kansas City Chiefs. I feel like I've seen something on that game. Like I have an image because they're in Kansas City. I feel like I have an image of that. I want to say there was a flyover. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen something of that in like NFL films or what have you. But yeah, another thing that I remember, not vividly, but I do know this is a thing, is the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. That movie, its initial, what would you call it, promotion, he swings onto the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They obviously have to change the movie because it comes out in 2002.
Well, and also,
that's the first promotion, and it's one of the first superhero movies since Batman in the 1980s with Michael Keaton. And this is sort of like the reintroduction. And it's not today, where superhero movies are kind of a dime a dozen. There's good ones, there's bad ones, but there's going to be one. This was sort of like a, hey, here you go. It's coming out next year. And I've seen that promotion a few times of him swinging onto the Twin Towers and then the pan out because that was the symbol of New York. And Spider-Man is sort of like the hero of New York.
Yeah, and I remember too, I mean, it's been almost a year now, but I recently binged all of Friends. And in the first few seasons of Friends, in the intro,
yep.
in the introductory montage, they have shots of the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the show itself didn't really address it. It did have, like, messages after
But
the
they
episode.
Definitely did not.
No, they didn't. Yeah. They never really addressed it. But at the time, though, you have to think that show was perceived as a comedy. It's
escapism.
It's escapism. It's trying to be lighthearted and not focus on the real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right? It was a very beloved show at the time, and I'm sure a lot of people turned to it for an escape.
Oh yeah.
And another thing too, that if you want to go back to sports, I mean, I know Jeremy and Joe brought this up, but the Sabres and Rangers. The first game of the NHL season, I think, or at least the first two between those two mm-hmm. teams, was October 7th of 2001. They both wear New York-themed jerseys. Mm-hmm. The Sabres changed their jersey for a game.
Yep.
And, you know, again, I'm not old enough, but I've rewatched the footage many times.
Oh, yeah.
That game itself, too, is a very, you know.
It's memorable.
It's very memorable. And it's again, it's hard to watch. It's all, you get really emotional and you get,
mm-hmm.
you think a lot. You know, that's another thing. Today's days like this for me are always this kind of like a reflection.
Oh yeah,
right. On just everything that's.
It's also one of the few days I actually like social media, and I mean that partially as a joke, but also seriously, because then you will get people to have these long stories, mm-hmm. and the long posts that you can see pictures and stuff like that. I really do enjoy that aspect. I will poke fun at social media all the time. These are one of those days I really enjoy it,
and that
because you do get. There will always be the one or two you know what's that that ruin it for everybody, but for the most part, it's very happy maybe is not the right word, but it feels good.
It's good to see the stories still being told because that's the one thing too is, you know, as we get further away from this event, I mean, you know, I think about like my cousin, right? My cousin was born in 2006. He wasn't even alive when this happened.
Yeah.
You know, when people can write down these stories and put them on the internet forever, that's important because you can have the younger generations still learn.
I mean, my brother's was born in 2001.
Yeah, right.
He was 3 months old.
Yeah, so obviously he doesn't.
And he's a guy that now can order a beer and go out.
Right.
So like it's. I mean, we've already gotten to that point. Jeremy brought up. I mean, it feels like
me
a long
and you
time
were
ago.
At that point.
But we're at that point. We're in our careers and stuff like that. So we're already getting to that point where people need to share the stories because we are at a point now where for kids in elementary school in our spots that we were at or preschool, the only thing they're going to see is sure the news coverage, but they're going to see in the history book. They're going to see those pictures and stuff like that and be like, I don't remember that. And then eventually we're going to be parents. You know, we're in that age group, 25, 26. We can be parents. You know, coming up here. And our kids will ask us, and we'll be like, ask grandma and grandpa. You know, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Jim on the line. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
I was at work in Lockport, and I was listening to WNSA with Artie Wander. And that station stayed on. Like, that's the first time I heard it, and I had everybody else switch their stations and that because they were listening to their music or CDs and that. It was just, I mean, I was at Ground Zero in May, and it just, like, brought back so many memories of just, like, listening to that. And just, like, we left there at 10 o'clock at work. We're supposed to work till, like, 2
mm-hmm.
because we just went home and stuff. And I served in the National Guard, and I retired in January 2001, and I called my recruiter, and I said, do I have to go back? And it's like, no, you did your time. I was willing, ready, and able to go, but it's just, I mean... Somebody told me before I was in school I was going to be a broadcaster, and I wanted to go sports broadcasting. And my teacher told me, he goes, he wanted me to do a paper, and I was going to do it on sports. He said, you can't do it on sports or weather. It's not news. And that brought me back that they stayed on that sports station for the news the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing. So sportscasters can broadcast the news too. So wherever the instructor is.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, thanks for the call. And yeah, that's the thing. I brought up college as well. And that was a big thing that I know my professors at Buff State and even my 1 year at Edinburgh brought up a lot of, like, you may want to be into sports, but you've got to be able to do not everything, but if something happens, if there is major breaking news, I mean, even in the sports world, if, you know, there is a you know, a car accident, a death, what have you, you've got to be able to pivot to a much more serious topic. And that's where, I mean, like, today does sound very somber, of course. I mean, we're going to get to happier topics. Don't get me wrong. I did want to start here just because I felt like it'd be inappropriate to not. But you got to be able to do both. And I think it's really nice that, you know, people can be reminded of that as well. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we get back, Sandy, we'll take your call. We're also taking yours as well. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to share your stories on what you remember from that day, or if you're in mine and Josh's shoes where you don't really have memories, you're getting them more from, you know, YouTube videos and documentaries and your parents who were obviously, you know, closer to our ages when it was happening. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Lopez wants it away.
And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run by Piazza. And the Mets lead 3-2.
Very famous home run from Mets catcher Mike Piazza of, you know, in the days following the attacks.
Was the first sporting event in New York since September 11th.
That moment I've seen hundreds of times. On just like most iconic sports moments, what have you, I have seen that a lot, and it always kind of, even if it's a little bit, it'll give me goosebumps. I'm not a Mets fan by any means, but that is a moment where it's like, oh wow, that'll get you. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Coming up at 10:45, we will hear Sal Capaccio's interview with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, giving a bit of an injury update as we head into game day tomorrow night as the Bills will travel down to Miami to take on the Dolphins for Thursday night football. We'll then talk to Sal at 11 o'clock, and then we'll also get a look at the weather at 11:30 as Patrick Hammer will join the show. But we go back to the phone lines. We are, of course, talking about today, 9/11, over 20 years ago today. Both Twin Towers were attacked by terrorists. Both went down. And it is a moment in history that both me and Josh, while yes, we were alive for it, we are both guys now in our mid-20s and don't really have much of a memory about it. And it's, you know, as two young guys, I will always enjoy getting to hear other people's experiences. So I took a class in high school, it was World War II, and my teacher at the time, Mr. May, it was one of our projects, go speak to a World War II veteran and hear their story. And we wrote a piece on it. It was one of my favorite projects I've ever done in a time in high school where I hated doing work. And it was still something I just loved.
I was the same way with history. It's something that you, when you learn about other people doing these amazing things.
Oh yeah.
And hearing what they went through, like it's something that just kind of is very captivating. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least for me, that it doesn't make it feel like work. It makes it just feel like you're actually like learning something.
Yeah.
And that's the coolest part about, you know, when we get to see these stories is you get to learn about these people that did amazing, incredible things on an awful day.
Yep. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Sandy on the line. Sandy, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good morning to you. It's a memorable day, yes, for everybody. I had to share a story that I did. I was in the car business for like 45 years. I'm retired now. But I'll never forget, it was like September 1st is when they deliver all the brochures for all the new cars coming out. It was the Ford Focus. And I was just there, got all the boxes, put them in there. And after September 11th, wow, what a thing. Ford came there and they grabbed every single brochure. And I go, why are you taking all the brochures? Well, I kept a box. And I opened up the box and there was somebody sitting in the Ford Focus staring up at the World Trade Center. And you could see the reflection in the sunglasses of the World Trade Center. And that's why they took them down. They took every single one of those brochures down. And I happened to keep a few for memorabilia. I'm going to send one to you guys so you have it. It's an incredible brochure to look at, just to see it. I get goosebumps, too, every time I see it. And when one of the police officers that were from Buffalo, New York, was down there, the car got demolished, and he brought me a piece of it. And I put a black leather trim all the way around it, and I had it framed. And it's just my memorabilia and something to keep me adapted to what's really going on. You know, I get goosebumps thinking about it right now.
And, you know, yeah, Sandy, thanks for the call, man. Yeah, and it keeps the memories alive. It does. And that is the thing. I mean, I brought up the Spider-Man example. I mean, that was the Twin Towers. I mean, the World Trade Center was the symbol of New York City at the time. Josh, I mean, you only really get that through historical context of hearing about it. But, like, yeah, that was the symbol. And so it makes sense that they all came back and go, we've got to change this. Makes sense. And, yeah, that's the part that always kind of surprises me a little bit, of just how much the world did just change. I mean, just the next day, I know Jeremy and Joe talked about it too, of air travel or air traffic just stopping.
Well, yeah, the other thing that's, you always see the time lapse of the flight map from that morning. There's like hundreds of, if not thousands, of planes in the air over the United States. And then within 30 minutes, they're all on the ground. And there's no flights. There's no planes on the flight map. It's crazy.
I don't even know. It couldn't have been like, you know, 2 weeks or whatever. But I've never like taken the time to like look up like when like flight travel actually started up again.
I think Jeremy said it was 24 hours something like that. But he wasn't even really sure either. But I know it was at least like a day or two.
But I know that's somebody. I actually very much enjoyed flying. I just this summer I got to take my girlfriend on her first flight, and it was like genuinely I was very excited for it. But I could imagine, you know, people after that event too just swearing off flying, like, I'm done. And I would completely understand it. Like, for me, again, I don't have really any of those experiences. I fly down to Florida, you know, every other year. I flew down to Nashville this year. I'm going to Texas later this winter. I love flying, and I've never had to think about it because, well, it was just, it's never been something for me. But I can imagine for a lot of people that was a jarring day, especially if you were someone that traveled a lot and all of a sudden on a dime everything stops. And you really don't get like much of an explanation because nobody really knows what's going on. It's a developing story as it's happening. So, of course, you're going to get people incredibly frustrated. They've got to be, you know, they're in Baltimore, but they've got to be in Houston by 4 o'clock or what have you. And everyone's freaking out. No one really knows what's going on. And even when the news is happening, it's still sort of, it feels surreal. I mean, we've had some of those moments in our lives that I've had that feeling of surrealism where you're just like, man, I am watching a moment in history. But am I? And then you're sort of almost grappling with just how much is this going to be remembered. It's a jarring feeling when you do sit down and sort of think about it. And somebody that, like myself, who is a history junkie, it can not be rattling, but definitely it sits with you. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Josh here on the line. Josh, how are we doing today?
Everything's today? Yeah, it's a somber, surreal day. I think you really nailed it there. For me, it was my senior year, Pioneer High School, and over there in Arcade. And I can remember my teacher, I think I was in chorus, Mrs. Miller, wheeling out the TV. And she was just crying even while she was, you know, bringing that TV into the chorus room. She's bawling. And I'm like, I can remember feeling like what, you know, it's surreal, I think is a great word that could describe it. But even on top of that, like that day, I can remember vividly because I was really into Pale Blue on Death, POD. If you remember, they had that song called Alive, and that album was called Satellite. It came out that day, and I can remember being like, I want to buy it, but I don't know if that's wrong. Like, am I wrong?
Yeah.
Buying this album?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I drove up to the city. I drove up to Best Buy. I bought it. It was really somber and weird and quiet. And I can just remember just that tension that was there for a long time. But even on top of that, like you guys were mentioning, the last caller called about the Ford Focus vehicles. It kind of reminded me of this band called Squad 5-0. If anybody wants to check it out, they had an album called Bombs Over Broadway. And before when the album came out, I think it was the year before what happened, it had two planes going down Broadway on the album cover, and they had to change it afterwards. But obviously it was like kind of a creepy, like, is this a prophecy or something?
Yeah, very ominous feeling.
Yep. So, yeah, I just wanted to share that again, because you were saying all those different memories and stuff. It really, I mean, I'm a little shooken up right now. Just kind of reflecting back on it, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to talk about it today.
Yeah, Josh, thanks for the call, man. And I think you nailed something too that I don't think is often talked about is in a sense almost returning to normal life. You mentioning going to like, oh, I want to get a record today. Like, is that like a bad thing? And just, you know, not the same, but you know, we're talking about living in historical events. January 6th, you know, the Capitol riots. I went to work later that day, and it felt weird. I worked at a car wash at the time, and I had my boss call me and was like, "Hey, are you honestly checking in? Like, are you cool to come in today? Checking, you know, making sure I'm okay, the whole thing." And I felt weird at the time answering it as positively as it is. I was like, "Yeah, of course. I'll be in like an hour and a half. Like, why are you calling me? Like, I'm coming in." I had a good relationship with my boss, so we were kind of giving it back to each other. But like, I could, you know, as I'm then getting in my car to drive, and I'm like, oh. And I had the same feelings that Josh the caller just had there, where I'm like, is that bad on me? Like, should I maybe have said no? Should I have thought about it? It was weird. It was very weird. I'm not comparing necessarily the two, but just I've had a similar experience of like, it feels kind of weird to go back to normal life, and especially the day of. But, you know, I think everyone does kind of return. It's just, you know, and that's what we're bringing up with the air traffic or, you know, and all the stuff. And I'm going to look that up in the next break. But if it was 24 hours, I would imagine people showing up the next day had a feeling of, why are we here? You know, we're very much the tension as well. I think Josh nailed that word as well, the tension around everything. It is one of those things. I wish I had more cognitive thoughts. I mean, as a 3-4-year-old, we're barely forming memories. I think, we all start to form memories at about 3.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
But yeah, so there's a part of me that wishes I did have memories, just because I am fascinated. I am interested in how the human mind works in situations like that, because it is something that is just captivating to me. Let's go back to the phones here before we take our next time out. We've got Mark on the line. Mark, how are we doing today? Mark, are you there? Mark is not there. That is a shame. Maybe we'll use this as a good transition to kind of move over. We are going to hear from Bills head coach Sean McDermott, his sit down with Sal Capaccio. I will tell you, though, Josh, haven't mentioned the injury report yet for the Dolphins. Achan Mozart out again of practice yesterday. I don't know if it was a walkthrough. I want to ask Sal that at 11, because the asterisk was there for the Dolphins report. I don't know if they've done two straight walkthroughs. That would be a big miss for them, for a team that sort of just slogged their way through to ultimately a win over Jacksonville.
And those two players were big parts.
They're big parts of it. They are, McDaniel comes from the Shanahan run scheme. We saw how that worked on Monday night.
Right.
McCaffrey may be the gear that gets the car, you know, going. But it's the Shanahan system that is like, I'm the car.
You can swap them out.
Yeah, I'm the car. And so I that's going to be something that I think is interesting. Oh, and we have news on that. Cameron Wolf is reporting. He's of NFL Network. Dolphins running back Raheem Mostert is out Thursday night against the Bills, while running back Devon Achane, an ankle injury, is more of a we'll see, could be a game time decision. That is per head coach Mike McDaniel. So, I mean, right there, one of the running backs is out. It is Raheem Mostert with a chest injury. Devon Achane seems to be a game time decision per head coach Mike McDaniel. And on that, we'll come back after a quick timeout, and we'll get more from the Bills head coach Sean McDermott as he sat down with Sal Capaccio. We'll do that after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Automotive. For whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
We've gotten an update on the Miami Dolphins, and now we do go to Sal Capaccio sit down with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, and his appearance on WGR is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, by Dunn Tire, the official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
Okay, good morning, Coach. Hope you had a great victory Monday, but obviously a quick turnaround here to a game on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's been a quick turnaround, Sal. It's a game we're looking forward to. Like every game, and it's a divisional opponent, so it'll be a big challenge for us.
Okay, obviously we know about some key injuries. Let's start with that. You've already ruled Taron Johnson out. I know you talked about Smoot a little bit. Anybody else you can tell us about for this game specifically?
Right, so Taron's out. Smoot will be out as well. Javon Solomon is listed as doubtful, and the rest should be good to go.
Okay, let's talk about Josh Allen a little bit. In his week, obviously he's got the left hand injury. We saw him with a glove on at practice. How did you feel Josh got through the last couple of days?
Well, he's managed it. He really has. He's done a good job. He's so physically and mentally tough. The trainers have done a really nice job. Again, in a short window of time, because of the quick turnaround, I think everyone's done a phenomenal job, including Josh. And he'll play a big part for us in the game.
We always talk about every year, every month. You even joked about it last offseason. Hey, we're always going to be talking about dialing it back with Josh or protecting him from himself. Even in this situation, is that a little bit tougher because you have to kind of think about that and have him understand the risks that go along with having an injured hand?
Well, he's been cleared to play medically. That's first and foremost in the conversations that we have had this week, have centered around first and foremost making sure that he is good to play, mm-hmm. which they've assured me that he is. And then we go from there. And at the end of the day, we all have to step up our game. And Josh, just like he did, I thought, fabulously last week, was really trusted the players around them, was in control of the game, in control of the pocket. It's definitely trying to be smart so that he can get through the whole game and beyond.
All right. So Taryn, obviously a big loss. He's a fantastic player. He's an all pro, but you have a guy in Cam Lewis who's been here 6 years, coach. I mean, like, for his growth and development to be in this position, I know you trust him, but he's also pretty unique. He plays safety. He plays nickel corner. He can be a personal protector. He can do a lot of things. What makes him so unique to be able to do all that?
Yeah. I mean, really, really to me, again, fascinating with his development, his growth. Great that he's a local guy from UB. I think that's just kind of the cherry on top here. And then, he's just wired in a way that he's extremely hungry. He works hard. And no job is too small. No job is too big. He's always been a team first guy. And here he gets an opportunity early in the season when Taryn goes down. And I thought he performed well last week. And this will be a big challenge again this week.
And, of course, the other UB guy, Jamarcus Ingram, for him to have to shift roles last week on a moment's notice, what does that say about him?
Again, another UB guy, right? And I thought Jamarcus had one of the best training camps of anyone mm-hmm. on our team, and that carried over into the first game. Quite honestly, not exactly knowing if he would have even been active for that mm-hmm. game until the injury with Smoot, perhaps. So all that being said, tremendous young man, works extremely hard. Really excited for him and the opportunity he has as well.
All right, one more specific guy I want to ask you about is Von Miller. We talked with Von on Wednesday. He said he felt like he was having a good camp. He did a lot of things well. It translated, even not just the sack that he had on Sunday, but he thought he was doing the things that he needs to do. How did you feel Von Miller played back in the opener?
Yeah, definitely a step in the right direction. And with that comes some confidence, I believe, right? Which we're all human, even someone like Von Miller, who's accomplished as he's been, we all need that kind of, affirmation of what we're doing and that is paying off. So great to see him. Great to see the smile on his face and when he got that sack, and we're looking for many more.
Coach, I want to ask you about a couple of things you were going to want to clean up on. First of all, penalties at home, false start penalties, things like that. How do you correct those things in practice? What do you kind of reinforce with the guys?
Well, the discipline, and then some of it's not always a discipline. Some is discipline. Some is, they're maybe thinking too much instead of thinking about the right things. Mm-hmm. So we're clearing one's head enough to think clearly. So we try and get to the bottom of it, but for sure we can't have it.
And then, of course, the kickoff return that went against you. Have you identified where the breakdown was and how to correct that?
I'll give them some credit with the scheme. We probably could have done a better job with handling the scheme. And then, like I mentioned after the game, I thought we had three or four players there to make the play. And unfortunately, one player knocked another player off, mm-hmm. and it was kind of like the perfect storm. So we've focused in hard on that over the last few days. And our hope is that it'll be better, and it needs to be better.
Let's go to the positive there. Brandon Codrington, first time he touches the ball in a Buffalo Bills uniform. What did you see that happened on that play with Brandon be able to break it?
Yeah, first of all, it was a ball that hit the turf, right? So good kick by their kicker, and that's a tough thing to field. You kind of got to be an infielder in baseball, mm-hmm. right? And I thought Brandon did a really nice job of fielding that, keeping his poise, and then getting vertical. And, we had a double team there, and we were able to get – a hat on a hat, as we say, which is a man on a man, and get some good blocks there for him. And just the energy it brought our team, I thought, was phenomenal, especially being down 7-0 right there. It was a big time energy swing.
And then, of course, Tyler Bass. I asked you about him the other day, but just to see him regain that form, I'm sure that was not only short term for what you needed in the game, but long term, how much that can mean for him.
Well, again, he's been on a journey like all of us. You go through through a journey when you're in this business year to year, and then just overall in your career. And there's going to be ups and downs. And, you know, I think it's been tremendous how he's handled it, right? Coming off of last year and in the last game, I know everyone wants to focus on that. And, you know, his focus is where it should be, which is, you know, on today and in the game last week. He was very present, and I thought he kicked it extremely well on the field goals and extra points, and we're looking for more of that going forward.
The Miami Dolphins had a big turnover near the goal line. The peanut punch came out. I was reading some stuff, how much they really concentrate on that. Every team does, right? How much is ball security going to be something you really preach this week, knowing they're going to be going after it, especially obviously with Josh in the hand and everything?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, typically against the Dolphins with their high powered offense, it's about points, not yards, mm-hmm. and then taking care of the football. I mean, you look at the games that we've played, you know, the first game last season, we were able to take the ball away and, mm-hmm. and score touchdowns rather than field goals. And in the second game, the last game of the regular season last year, we had yards, but not as many points, you know, through touchdowns and whatnot. So it's points over yards and making sure we take care of the ball.
And then, of course, to have this dynamic offense, but you are a bit familiar with them. Does it help a little bit to have two familiar opponents? They're going to have the same thing on you, a short week, as opposed to a team that you haven't seen very much.
At the end of the day, we got to go play football, right? And coach football, right? So it'll be about blocking, tackling, and execution, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
No doubt about it, Coach. What do you normally do on Thursday night football? How do you normally spend a Thursday night as opposed to playing a football game in South Florida?
Well, normally we're getting done practice on a Thursday for us and our process here, and getting home probably somewhere, I don't know, after the game has started, and we're kind of starting to wind down our week. So this will be us ramping our week up in a short amount of time here. So we're looking forward to it.
All right. Good luck. Best of luck on Thursday night. Safe travels to South Florida.
All right. Thanks, Sal.
That was Bills head coach Sean McDermott's appearance with Sal Capaccio and his appearance on WGR. It's brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, the official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. For the Bills, we do now know officially that Dwayne Smoot has been ruled out, along with Taron Johnson, who was earlier in this week. Really, the story for him now is, will he be placed on IR? While Javon Salmon is going to be considered doubtful, who's been dealing with that oblique injury. Everyone else, though, good to go. And that, of course, does include Bills quarterback Josh Allen. He was ruled officially a go by McDermott earlier this week, but now it seems to kind of just be like, yeah, he's managing it. We're working through it. You know, he's got a glove on, might wear it, may not, but he's going to be a good to go. And then for the Dolphins, as Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel just wrapped up speaking with the media about 10-15 minutes ago. He has ruled out running back Raheem Mostert due to a chest injury, while Devon Achane, also a running back with an ankle injury, is considered a game-time decision. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we'll hear from Sal Capaccio, get his thoughts on what he heard from Bills head coach Sean McDermott. That's coming up after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number two on a Wednesday of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here, and joining us now on the West Her Hotline following his sit-down with Bills head coach Sean McDermott is our own Sal Capaccio. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. Good morning to you as well.
So we do have some injury news for the Bills. Taron Johnson, it was, I believe, outright confirmed earlier in the week, and then Dwayne Smoot confirmed today, and we also know Javon Salmon is doubtful.
Yeah, that's right. You know, this injury with Smoot happened last week, late in the week, and there was nothing. He was fine until Friday it popped up, and McDermott told us and told me on the Extra Point Show last Friday that Dwan Smoot was going to be dealing with a toe injury and he, you know, they were going to monitor him. Well, then he missed the game. That was something they had to kind of change up as of Friday to Saturday. While obviously he's out again in this game, the Bills will obviously have an opportunity here to, you know, kind of evaluate how they played it on Sunday. We'll see if there's any elevations. It was Cameron Klein last week. Is that again? Kingsley Jonathan would be available to elevate. We'll see where they go there. As far as Taron Johnson is concerned, we know that Cam Lewis is the backup nickel cornerback. That's why I asked Sean McDermott about Cam and his journey. 6 years in the league now, 6 years in the system. He knows it very well. He's a very, very important player for this roster for all the different things that he can do. So he'll be the main backup nickel corner. And now you wonder, when the Bills do go to that dime package, last week it was Jamarcus Ingram, which he's not, it's not really his thing, right? He's a corner who was put there last week due to circumstance. I wonder if this is Cole Bishop time, guys. I wonder if Cole Bishop sees his first action in an NFL regular season game, and is that what the Bills play is on in that dime package?
On Taron Johnson, just for everyone, because now it's sort of kind of feels like we're all waiting for the IR news. If he's going to be placed on there, mm-hmm. If not, what's the timeline for the Bills to be actually be able to do that?
Yeah, good question. As opposed to a Sunday game, when you play on a Sunday, you have to make all those moves by Saturday at 4 p.m. For a weekday night game, you don't have to do that until you announce your inactive list. So that would be 90 minutes before kickoff. Now, we could hear something tomorrow evening or even today, whatever. But if the Bills are to put Taron Johnson IR on IR or whatever elevations they're going to make, that doesn't have to actually be announced until tomorrow evening before the game. So for anybody who thinks, well, they didn't do it today, so that means they're not going to do it, that's not the case. It doesn't mean they're going to do it. What they're going to do is sit down and figure out how long is this injury going to keep them out for. If they think it's 2 weeks, they won't put him on IR. They'll bring him back. If it's 3 weeks, if it's 4 weeks, that's a decision to make, guys, because if they don't put him on IR, they have to carry him on the roster, eat up a roster spot while he's just inactive, which they can do. Or if they know it's going to be about a 4 week or more injury, then my guess would be they would put him on injured reserve.
So with quarterback Josh Allen, we know that he's cleared to play on Thursday. He had a kind of a big glove on his left hand yesterday. I mean, what were some things you saw at practice yesterday? What's some stuff that we can maybe look for? But is he's looking okay, right? Like nothing really different there?
Well, he's medically cleared to play. That's what matters, right? And he's been a full participant. So as Sean McDermott said, you know, obviously, you know, you have the injury, you have the injury check with trainers. We know that he went through all of that. And if you go back and listen to that interview with Sean McDermott, he said, you know, his first thing is he medically cleared to play? Okay, he is. Then you go from there, right? And they're not going to give you the game plan, obviously, but my assumption would be, you know, you have to keep that in mind a little bit, what he's dealing with, what can he do, can he do? From Josh's standpoint, he said he felt good yesterday. He could do everything he normally could do. Yes, he's wearing the glove on his hand. That's a little bit different. I don't know if he's going to wear the glove in the game, guys. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe it's just for practice, for precautionary measures. You know, they could wind up, you know, taping it a little bit, or, you know they had the two fingers that were taped together. So we'll see. But he's medically cleared to play. He's good to go. In fact, McDermott said outside of Taron Johnson, Dwan Smoot and being out, and then Javon Solomon being doubtful, he said everyone else is good to go.
Real quick, you brought up Cole Bishop as well on that point. He seemingly has been somebody, as preseason was sort of wrapping up, all of a sudden he was starting to practice more, then became a full participant. Inactive last week, but Sal, as you brought up, this could be his time now to jump in with the injuries as well. You got to imagine the Bills feel a bit more comfortable now that he has been able to have a full go here. He has been able to start getting reps where ultimately he effectively missed all of the reps he could get in the preseason and training camp due to injury.
Yeah, listen, there's a few things at play here though, right? Which is the health of him. Is he ready to go? Which he's been a full participant, but then it's how comfortable you are putting him in a defense that he's not, you know, he's still learning. And let's remember who the opponent is here, right? This is a Miami Dolphins team that's going to play with your eyes a lot. They're going to do a lot of different things with motion. You know, are you ready to insert him into that situation for his first NFL game experience on the road under the lights in Thursday Night Football? I just think that that's something you have to really consider with all of this. Now, you could simplify the plan and say, okay, when you're in there, Cole, this is just your job. You go cover the tight end. Bam, one-on-one. That's fine. When you're in there, you stay in this spot. Like, that's fine. And of course, I'm not giving him enough credit maybe for allowing him to do more, but certainly you don't, to me,
have your full playbook available to you on defense with all 11 players when he's on the field in that situation in his NFL debut, as you may have with a guy who's been a little bit more experienced. So I think that's just a needle that Bobby Babich is going to have to thread a little bit here if in fact, that Cole Bishop plays. We don't know that. He could still be inactive again, guys, but if he does play, I think you have to think about all that stuff.
So looking at the other side of the field real quick, Dolphins this morning rule out Raheem Mostert with a chest injury, and Devon Achane is a game-time decision, according to head coach Mike McDaniel. What are your thoughts there, Sal? I mean, that's if both of those players are out, that's a big blow for the Dolphins' offense.
Yeah, it is a very big blow for the Dolphins' offense. Listen, they have so much speed, and obviously those two guys are guys that really accentuate that speed of what they have all around the roster. It's not just Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and everybody. It's their running backs. They'll get it to the running backs. They get to the edges. That's how they've attacked the Bills here in their games the last couple of years. The game in Buffalo, they really did that well. The Bills actually did a much better job against them down in Miami doing that. Now, if they're without, now we know they're going to be without Mostert, so that puts a little more workload on Devon Achane, except we don't know if he's even going to play. So even if he has to have a little more workload, can he handle that? What if he doesn't play? Well, the next guy in line, whether it's going to be in lieu of both these guys or just as a backup to Achane, the next guy in line is Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson's no slouch. He's a pretty good player. He played in San Francisco, went to Miami. He can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield. But I think more than anything, it's just about kind of the numbers and the workload. And, you know, we'll see. It's having Mostert out, even if Achane plays, probably impacts even the workload of Achane because he's dealing with an injury. You don't really have a backup behind him. So you have to kind of, you're the Dolphins, keep that in mind as well.
All right, Sal, last thing here before we let you get out of here. I know you got a flight to catch. In terms of it being a Thursday night game, what is sort of the itinerary for Bills fans to kind of keep up with heading into game time tomorrow night?
Yeah, so the team will fly out today to South Florida. And then tomorrow, there's usually typically a walkthrough for the team at the team hotel or nearby or whatever. They generally do that during the day for a night game. That's pretty protocol for any team traveling. You know, and then obviously the game gets going tomorrow night and, you know, fly right back home. And we'll have a Buffalo Bills football reaction Friday, I guess, and hopefully a win to talk about to go 2-0. I mean, this is for early supremacy in the AFC East. And, hey, the Patriots are right there too, right? They won their game. But whoever wins this game has the early lead in the AFC East at 2-0, and then we'll see what the Patriots do. And that's why it's a really big game. Of course, a division game, tiebreakers, and a lot here early in the season in this game.
All right, Sal. Well, let's get out of here. Thanks for joining us for this until you go get your flight. We'll talk again later.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline, giving his thoughts post the conversation with Bills head coach Sean McDermott from earlier this morning. And again, ultimately, the Bills had a lot of injuries in the preseason, and it was a little bit of a worry, but now it has become, well, they're managing it. It's two big names that are out for, you know, we'll see about Taron Johnson, but he missed basically the entire first game. I think he was out by like the third or fourth play of the game, and then he was ruled out very quickly for week two. We'll keep an eye on that if the Bills do place him on IR. If they don't, but he's at least effectively going to miss two games. And then Matt Milano, of course, he is basically out for the whole season. They're hoping for a December return. Outside of those two big injuries, and they are big injuries, I don't want to like act like they're, you know, they mean nothing. The Bills have managed their injuries very well. We'll see about Curtis Samuel as well. He's somebody that's dealing with turf toe. Didn't play a ton in week one. Ultimately, you know, we'll see if that continues to be a trend or if that's sort of just, you know, hey, he's still coming back from it. Or it could also just be they were keying in on him.
Don't worry. Anyone out there that's also superstitious like me, as Zach was saying, that I knocked on the wood paneling we have on the wall in the studio here.
I was wondering what you were doing.
Don't worry. It's done.
I didn't want to bring anything up, but I was like,
I looked at him and I smiled while I was knocking on the wood. How do you not get that? Knock on wood when you're talking about injuries. Like, please.
That's fair.
What are we doing here? You know how superstitious I get. This is crazy.
Yeah. I'm fine with it.
What are you doing to me?
I'm fine with it.
But no, I agree with you, though. I mean, it's a good spot for the Bills to be in, I think, right now, aside from the two big injuries, of course. Mm-hmm. I am interested. Sal brought up the glove that Allen is wearing. I'm interested to see if he's going to wear that in the game.
The vibes are going to be so low. It's white top loop pants, and all of a sudden my quarterback's
wearing a glove.
What is your
problem with that? I like the white top blue pants.
No.
It looks clean.
It pops. Every road game, the Bills should be in all whites. Every road game.
The Stormtrooper?
Yes. It's the best. And then you have the white face mask too that they added.
Yeah, the white face mask is great. But no, I look at I want to look at the glove thing too, because I'm just, if he does wear it in the game,
I'd be so upset.
I don't know. I think it's just a little, hey, just in case, you know? And I want to see, you know, I would want to see him do some handoffs with the glove on, and you know, if they're clean, then who cares?
That was the big thing everyone was talking about, is having to do handoffs with your left hand. Is that going to cause issues? You know, are they obviously going to have to kind of change up? You know, is he going to be able to take snaps under center? We already saw with Atlanta, and that's a much more drastic injury for Kirk Cousins coming off that Achilles, where it was like, hey, he can't move. It's gonna it's gonna be in shotgun.
You could tell even when he had to, he could not move.
Very different. The most drastic, you know, example.
Does Atlanta look not stupid now for drafting Michael Penix?
No, they look dumb for giving Kirk Cousins that huge contract.
Aside from that, the focus has shifted from being dumb to drafting Michael Penix to being dumb to paying Kirk Cousins. Maybe they were looking ahead, covering their bases.
Just draft the rookie.
Well, yeah.
And sign Tyrod Taylor, who's a really good backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. Goes out one drive on Monday night, throws a touchdown. Good for him.
It's gorgeous. But like, he starts for like 4 or 5 games. I don't even totally agree with that. I think Atlanta's a talented enough team to just throw Penix in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, you draft Penix, throw him in there. You've got all this talent.
Tell him to hand the ball off to Bijan and just watch.
Or you got Pitts. You got... I don't like the Falcons. I don't like them at all.
Back to the Bills, though. With Allen, but with the glove. Again, that's like Sal drastic. Said, we don't know if he's going to wear it in the game. It'd be interesting to see if he does. I don't know. I don't take too much problem with it if he can hand the ball off okay, and if he can snap the ball, if he can receive the ball under center, glove or not, that's fine. As long as you can keep doing your job and you're not, you know, hurting yourself more, then cool, wear the glove. I think it matches nicely with the outfit. What am I saying?
What am I saying?
But no, it is funny, though, because
I hate quarterbacks that wear gloves.
His hand looks so much bigger in the glove, too.
I know, but like, I think it's also quarterback that wears gloves, I'm like, cool, he's going to throw for under 200 yards.
It's also
going to be a disaster. Peyton Manning is like the one guy who like truly was a trendsetter with it. It's because he couldn't feel his fingertips.
Yeah.
He had to wear it after his neck injury.
It is kind of weird. And
don't give me Brady. He has no drip. He has no swag when he's out there on the field. Don't give me him.
Have we ever seen Josh Allen wear a glove before?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
There was never a rain game where he might have wore it.
I don't think so.
I feel like if you try to wear gloves in the rain, that's even worse.
Well, yeah, but the gloves are sticky. That's right. They get unsticky.
See, I remember Justin Fields, maybe this was his rookie year against San Francisco, playing Trey Lance in like that monsoon in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he had two gloves on.
Yeah. And that's two gloves is never the answer. Like when Kenny Pickett would wear the two gloves.
Kenny Pickett, Teddy Bridgewater.
It's not the right move.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's like wearing two gloves as a baseball player. One batting glove. You wear one glove as a quarterback if you're going to wear one.
And the baseball players that do wear a glove and then put on the mitt, the worst.
I hate it.
The worst.
I can't stand it.
I saw, and it was not a lot of people, but it was some on Twitter yesterday who were like, well, I like the glove. And I'm like, cool. Blocked.
Hey.
Never going to see their opinions again. Blocked.
Fine.
Gone.
Fine. Block me right now. Do it.
You don't think it will, which
do
is bad.
Do it. But I'm not scared.
It's not where I'm superstitious, but like I do not like them wearing the white tops, blue pants. It's a night game. It should be all whites in Miami. That stadium always kind of gives off a good look. The Bills wearing their blue tops, white pants in Miami Stadium always looks very good. It looks good on television. The blue tops, white pants, because they've worn their home uniforms a lot. Miami.
Because of Miami's like alternates and stuff.
Miami will then wear white
because
it's, you know, 1 o'clock in South Florida in September.
And you're sitting on the sideline in the sun.
But the Bills' blue tops look good on TV when they're playing in Miami. They do.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, they pop. But honestly, of all the things I'm superstitious about, this is not one of them.
The uniforms?
Yep.
I can't even say I'm superstitious. I like my teams to look
good.
Give
into it. Embrace it.
No, that's my thing. I'm not a big like alternate uniforms guy. I just don't really care for them all that much. Like the NBA has some pretty good alternate
ones.
Unless
it's the Goathead.
The Goathead I do like, but I like the Goathead more just for the historical aspect. Like the historical alternates I like.
Yeah, okay.
But the alternates that we're just going to create just for...
I'm not a huge fan of those. Yeah.
Some of them I love. Minnesota's all-white uniforms, I think, are going to look really good. I kind of hope they actually keep them long-term because I think they are going to pop. But for the most part, like, I like the Bills to have the blue top, white pants, home uniforms, and the all-white away uniforms and be done. I don't love all, like, the different combinations and stuff like that. I think Arizona ultimately wore, like, kind of like an iteration of, like, their 80s uniforms on Sunday against the Bills. And I was like, eh, it was fine. The Eagles wore sort of like a black alternate away against the Packers. And I'm like, eh.
See, but those are
not great.
Those are, I like the black Eagles jerseys. I think they look nice.
Green Bay also has one where they're all green. Like, I think that's their version of the color rush. Good. No. I do not like the Bills color rush. That might be my most controversial opinion. I hate it.
I'm not fully against you there, but I don't know. It's not that bad.
Sorry. My buddy 3 years ago was like, it's longer because the Sean McCoy was still on the Bills. So it was like 8 years ago. And he's like, do I get like a red or a white Sean McCoy jersey? And I'm like, well, if you get a red one, we're not friends anymore. that makes your decision easier. He ended up getting a red one. We're still friends. But neither here nor there.
Coward. You didn't stick to your morals.
No. 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's get to your calls here. We go to Zach on the line. Zach, how are we doing today?
Hey, good. I called in about the glove, but you got me thinking about uniforms. So listen, I don't understand why they don't go back to bringing back the 90s blue, late 80s, 90s blue with the red helmets. They'd make a ton of money, number one. Number two, it's all over the internet. It's kind of like when we were pushing really hard for the royal blue. It's kind of like I love Seattle's throwback uniforms. There's some atrocious uniforms. I'm so sick of Nike thinking it's cool to put big letters, Arizona, or big letters, whatever the city is on the chest. It's kind of dumb. But what I really called in for was the glove. Listen, he's playing us. It looks cool. It reminds me of Peyton Manning. I do think Brady wore it a couple of times. I think maybe because it was cold. But he's playing us. It's just like the visor. We all see it in practice. And then next thing you know, he rolls out and he's like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I do wonder, though, if he does wear it. I don't think he's going to, but if he does, I'm only worried about, like, taking a snap from under center. I don't know which hand he has, on the center usually. But that's where I get worried. Does he not feel it? Does he jam it up a little more? And I hate to be limited. Not that, you know, we can't operate out of a shotgun. But that's one thing no one's really talking about is, like, under center. I don't think it'll hamper his ability to throw it. I do wonder. He does sometimes, you know, not quite stiff arm, but kind of hold a guy off him and while he's falling to the ground and still throw it. I do wonder, you know, like, would a defender grab his hand and try to, you know, inflict a little pain there? But, I do wonder about the center exchange. And then ultimately, I don't think he's going to wear it. He's playing us. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Zach. I didn't even think about the visor thing. That is something that breaks my heart, at least one training camp and or the return to the blue and red practice, that Allen will come out in a visor. I'm like, he looks awesome. He's 6'5", he's 230. He looks like a guy out of a fantasy novel.
He looks like a poster of what you would think of a quarterback.
And then it never does it. And this is my thing. I think the glove is dumb. So for me, I'm like, I hope he doesn't wear it. But there will be people out there, not judging, that will look at the glove and go, oh, please wear it.
There will be side-by-side pictures of him and Peyton Manning.
Probably. And I don't want that. It's not a good look. When quarterbacks are wearing gloves, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are the outlier. Tom Brady also had no swag with it. So, like, let's not. And Peyton Manning, more of a medical reason he was wearing it. Quarterbacks wear gloves. It's a sign of disaster. You're in, like, DEFCON 1. We all laughed about Kenny Pickett's small hands, but he wore gloves. And Pittsburgh was like, Dan Marino all over again. Did you see him at Pitt? Yeah, he wore two gloves. You should have known. The signs were all there. You should have known. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Mark here on the line. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. You hear me on? I just think is Kurt Warner the best two glove quarterback to ever
Kurt Warner.
He, for Arizona, I mean, he was on fire that year. But, I want to see Josh Allen throw the ball 40-plus times this game. I want to go back and say this is the Dalton Kincaid game that, you know, these little almost use it as, remember the Patriots, they kind of use these short passes as a way to run. And for the sake of not being able to hand off with this left hand. I mean, playing with a broken hand, man, this guy's got some stones because he's going to feel that every single play. I don't have a great feeling about it, but, I mean, If we win, I think we really got to see a big game from Kincaid and Shakir doing these little short, little gadget slants. Just how Brady made a living with Edelman and those guys. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I hope that's what happens. I'm having to listen. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Mark. It hasn't been officially said it's a broken hand.
No,
I do know, though, Joe brought up the middle finger and the ring finger had been taped together.
Yep.
As someone that has broken my hand, that will happen. They do the tape thing.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks.
And if you look when he comes down on
it's his elbow.
But it's those two fingers specifically that his elbow is kind of splitting.
Yeah.
Like, his elbow goes between, because you're putting your hand on your elbow when you do that, your fingers kind of naturally mm-hmm. cradle it, and the two that split are your ring finger and your middle finger.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's where the main point of contact mm-hmm. was, and that's probably why.
On the throwing the ball, though, that is something I've pushed, that I think they are going to use the short passing game as sort of almost like the run game. I think, honestly, they will probably run the ball more than maybe I was anticipating. I mm-hmm. was somebody that was, you know, banging the drum that it was more due to necessity, what have you. But I it's tough for me to totally put it on to week one, because they were going up against a bad run defense. And ultimately, in the first half, they were getting, on average, over 7 yards per carry. It would have been coaching malpractice to go away from it until they proved they couldn't stop it. And then they kind of kept, though, doing it in the second half. And that's my fear. I do want them to throw more. Allen seems to pick apart the Dolphins every time he plays them. Doesn't even matter who's on the field for the Dolphins. He seems to just have their number. That happens a lot with divisional opponents. Brady played some of his best games ever against the Bills. Dak Prescott has made nearly a living, especially early on in his career, of just making fun of Washington and the Giants. You know, that happens. And Allen's victim seems to be the Dolphins.
How would you feel if he threw for 40-plus passes?
I'm thrilled.
Like Mark said.
Thrilled.
I would be, too. I mean,
but I also think it is, to what Mark's point is, it's going to be the short passes, just getting the ball out quick.
But we talked about it yesterday, how we can potentially, you know, we have to see as the games go on here, is the Bills' offensive scheme going to drastically change each and every week? Because last week it was run the ball, run mm-hmm. the ball, run mm-hmm. the ball, and then all of a sudden it was, you know, hey, here's some important passes as the game went on.
Yeah.
Is this game going to be the inverse of that, where it's pass, 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 and then boom, a big run breaks off? You know what I mean? Like, I think if that happens, it's kind of an indicator of what we're going to see throughout the season, of this scheme constantly changing and just being drastically different each and every week, which...
Rather than, this is what we do,
right,
and we're going to do
this
really
This is a base of what we do, and we're not going to deviate too much.
Yeah.
Be a jack of all trades and a master of none, essentially, which might work out, but
it can work out because of who your quarterback is.
Right. But there's dangers with that, too, because if you have this constant fluctuation in what you're doing, your players could get confused. Your players could, you know,
get frustrated.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of issues that could arise with that. But if you can make it work, and if everyone stays happy and healthy,
it can work.
You know, there you go.
803-0550 is the number to call. What do you want to see tomorrow night for game day? But coming up after a quick timeout, Patrick Hammer, chief meteorologist of WGRZ, joins the show as we get a look at the weather down in South Florida. We'll also get a little bit of a look for Buffalo as well. It's getting hot out after having a few days of quote-unquote elite season. We'll do that after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Break it down! Time.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. And that music does mean we go to the Western Hotline as we are joined by Chief Meteorologist over at WGRZ, Patrick Hammer. Pat, how are we doing today, man? What's going on?
I'm good. And by the way, guys, I really want to applaud you for allowing you and your listeners to do a little reflection on 9/11. I think it's important. I think it's cathartic. And I think, you know, we all need to kind of, I know you guys are a bit younger, but you still have memories, and you allowed a lot of those that needed to express theirs to have a voice today. And I just appreciate that, because you're right. Watching the video that you recommended on the documentary on those French filmmakers, which I had seen originally, I mean, that's powerful stuff. So I think that was important stuff to do today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, and we've had a few people tweeted us as well, other documentaries. No sports tonight. I mean, that's probably what I'm going to be watching, or at least checking some of those out. Pat, what do you remember from that day?
Well, not much has changed for me. I was working in morning television during that period. I was in a very different area. I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, working for the CBS station. And I, at the time, Brian Gumbel, who's most famous for the Today Show on NBC and, of course, HBO World Sports, sports. But at the time, he was working for CBS, CBS Morning News, and we were just ending our morning show. And I'm on the weather wall about to do my forecast. And in my ear, I'm told, toss to Brian Gumbel for a special report. And we're like, okay. So I'm like, we now go to CBS News and Brian Gumbel for a special report. And the first image you see is of the first, it's after the explosion. The only documentary film, I think, to capture that was that documentary that you mentioned, because no cameras were turned to the building at the time. And it was thought to be a small plane. That's what everybody kind of thought. Nobody knew. And from there, my experience was like everybody else's, just like in shock and awe. And then, of course, 17 minutes later, when now all the cameras are pointed to both towers, you see the second one hit live, and that's when, our world changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I should have brought up when we were talking about in the first hour, too, don't want to forget about the third plane that ultimately the passengers were able to take over. It was, of course, heading towards the Pentagon. I've seen, I want to say a documentary, but I think it was one of those dramatizations about it. But that was something, right, for years growing up, until I was like 10, 11, 12, did not know there was a third plane. It was just something that was never really brought up in my life.
There was a fourth plane, of course, the one that actually hit the Pentagon.
Yep.
But yeah, that final one, there's an incredible, I mean, that's where the famous line, "Let's roll," was captured on a cell phone, which is when a young man from, I believe, where I'm from, San Francisco, kind of led the charge to rush the plane and take over the hijackers and, bring the plane down before it did anything even worse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, me and Josh have talked about it. We were 3 and 4 years old. My brother at the time was born 3 months before the events, too. So we're entering that period now where, when we have kids, if they ask us about it, we're going to have to sit there and go, ask your grandparents. We don't really know. And so I think it is important to kind of share stories, have those stories be told so that it is not forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I've got kids who are teenagers, and for them, it's, history book material.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my best to, not for the dramatization of it, but just to see it, is to watch some of the videos every single year and just really capture the tragedy that happened firsthand as we all saw it. And there's more of a disconnect as it's getting a little farther. And I mean, a disconnect with the kids, our kids' generation that don't have a direct link to it. Many do, of course, that had parents or relatives who perished. But, with my kids, it's, something they see in the history books. It's like, no, it's it's very raw. It's very real. And, when I was listening to you guys earlier today and you brought up that documentary, I was like, oh, my gosh, I remember that. They were just taking regular footage and the camera, I think, was pointed at the ground, and then you hear the roar of the plane overhead and they immediately tilt their camera up. And that was the one video of that first impact. Anyway, I just really thought your show this morning was important.
Thanks so much. But on to the game coming up on, tomorrow. Bills going to Miami, but it's at night. Is that gonna change the weather though all that much, or is it still gonna be hot as you know what?
We were joking on our show this morning how 2 years ago it seemed like the Miami Dolphins installed heat lamps and mirrors on our sideline to make it even hotter, right? I mean, it was just so terribly let's reflect the sun on the visitors bench. This being a night game, the sun will not be an issue. It is going to certainly be warm. It is certainly going to be humid. 84 is the kickoff temperature. It will feel like it's in the 90s when you add in the humidity, so the heat index will be up there. There also is a chance of some rain. There will be some wandering thunderstorms, which is very typical, of course, for South Florida this time of the year. So that can't be ruled out. There could be a little impact for, from some rain, very little wind, but at least it will not be Hades like it was 2 years ago.
Pat, you just mentioned thunderstorms, and my mind immediately went to a delay, and my heart sank. I know like nothing has happened, but I'm like, oh, it's going to be a long day already. Don't do that to me.
I know. And those of us that work in the morning, you know, it's like, come on. You're already messing with me with this schedule. But
that's right. I'll be able to actually sleep in. It'll just be a long night. Josh will have to get up in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm not looking forward to any potential delay. Please, please push the thunder away from Miami. Do whatever you can, Pat. I would really appreciate
it. Delays there don't usually last that long if they do happen. Mm-hmm. I guess you can't rule it out. But, you know, what's also interesting is that not too far away will be a landfalling hurricane from, you know, Florida is where it is. South Louisiana is going to have a hurricane move on shore later today, tonight. By tomorrow night, it'll be moving into the southeast. It will have no impact on the Bills game, but it's just interesting that not far from where the Bills are playing, a hurricane will be, or a former hurricane will be, spinning through.
Speaking of extreme weather, Pat, we'll get to the fact that it's going to be September 12th tomorrow, and it's going to be the 80s in Buffalo. Personally, thrilled. But tornadoes around Western New York have become a thing. What is that about?
Okay, so yes, 9 tornadoes have occurred across Western New York this season, which is a crazy number for us. 31 across the state of New York. The old record was 21, I think, set in 1992. So we've shattered that. Okay, on a grand scheme of things, this has not been a terrible severe weather season for us. It just seems that whenever there's a little severe weather, there's a tornado. And, you know, there's no real rhyme or reason. There's a couple of things just to quickly highlight. The tornado that, you know, of course, hit, we had two of them, one that hit Eden. That was actually spawned by the remnants of a former hurricane, Beryl. And sometimes when tropical systems move this far north, they can get the atmosphere to twist in certain ways, and that's not totally uncommon. The two tornadoes that we had Monday were crazy because they were actually caused partly by very cold air, not necessarily warm and humid air, but it was, if you recall, the weekend was chilly. Monday was kind of chilly, and we had tornadoes occur when it was in the 60s, which is also really bizarre. But you had some interaction with some breezes off Lake Ontario and Lake Erie. The same process occurred back on August 6th when we had the downtown Buffalo tornado, which was also crazy. So it's been a very bizarre season. One we're going to kind of study. You know, is it a sign of things? You know, that's up for debate. But you can put some blame on the tornadoes this season on some things, including a former hurricane and exceptionally cold air in the upper levels of the atmosphere over the weekend and on Monday, and a warm lake. And boom, you get the recipe for some severe weather.
Well, we're not going to really have any of those cold temperatures moving ahead over the next few days, right? I mean, what's this little heat wave here? Is this how the rest of September is going to be, or is this just kind of like a weekend thing?
For the foreseeable future, yeah. We've got, we're around 80 degrees today, and get used to that. It's going to last through the weekend and into next week. I wish there was a Bills home game on Sunday because it would have been absolutely beautiful. We're going to see sunshine, 80s through at least next Tuesday. If there's any change coming, it's in a week. So enjoy this stretch of sunny, warm weather that's got at least another 6 to 7 days to go. Crazy. After having such a cool fall-like weekend, this is kind of an abrupt change right back to summer.
Is there any chance the mornings are going to be a little warmer? Because when I get up in the morning, it's like, you know, 4 a.m. and it's 52 degrees when I leave the house. So I put on some jeans and a hoodie or a quarter zip or something. And now I'm going to leave today and it's going to be 80 degrees and I'm going to be sweating. So is there any chance the mornings can get a little warmer with the rest of the day?
That is, to me, what I love about like warmth in September, because it doesn't usually come with a lot of humidity. When it's humid, it doesn't cool down at night. So that's why, like, in July and August, you can have these, like, 85, 88-degree days, and the lows are in the 70s. In September, the closer you get into fall or towards fall, it's usually not as humid. Dry air cools off quickly and warms up quickly. So you're getting these cool mornings and warm afternoons, and that's probably going to continue. After 80 today, 83 to 85 tomorrow, lows will still be in the 50s. So it does cool off at night. And that, you know, is the definition for elite fall weather, in my opinion. So, yeah, that'll continue. It's not going to warm up at night very much at all.
I guess I'll have to do the daily battle between shorts and jeans, and maybe we'll just have to suck some days. Yeah, that's true.
In the morning, and it's true. Just like, I know it's going to be a warm day, but I don't have to start like feeling sticky the minute I, you know, leave the house. It's just a nice, cool, fresh air, and then it warms up nicely in the afternoon.
And it makes for such beautiful sleeping weather. Like, it's so easy to just fall asleep. No fan, no AC, just boom, off the bed.
100%. Totally agree.
All right, Pat. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll talk again later, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Go Bills.
That was WGRZ's chief meteorologist, Patrick Hammer, joining us to talk the weather that has been going on in the world. I will tell you, though, Josh, speaking of sleeping weather here, we got to get to another break, but gorgeous night last night. Open up my window. We're going to let the cool air come in. I'm going to sleep like a baby. What is going on? Someone is banging a hammer on, like, to metal for, like, 6 hours. And then it stopped. And then, like, 4 a.m. today, it started again. And I don't know what's happening.
What?
I don't know if it's construction, because I live right by the thruway or, you know, a couple streets over. But it sounded like it was my neighbor doing it, and it wasn't. That's how close it was. It sounded like just right across the street it was happening, and it was not happening.
There is construction happening on the thruway, like near the 33, like the one off-ramp to the 33 if you're getting off to go into Buffalo. If you're getting off the thruway to go into Buffalo, that ramp is closed. I see that every morning. I see all the people, you know, kind of finishing up work because they do it overnight. So maybe that's
I don't know. It sounded like Godzilla was making a sword. it was absurd.
I live like a block and a half away from Niagara Falls Boulevard, so I'm always hearing some traffic. Yeah. So
yeah.
I'm not built for this.
I usually just put in like headphones or something.
Get a white noise machine.
I could do that. Actually, I do
that's
like
that. That's what I do.
But, I'm telling you.
I listen to rain.
It sounded like Godzilla was making a sword.
The sound of rain.
So good. Sleeping during a thunderstorm, the best.
Worst when you're a kid, though.
I was never that scared of thunder.
Oh,
I always thought it was really cool.
I was never scared of it. I would just wake up and be like, oh, my God, what's happening?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. Let's go back to bed.
803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show here. As we wrap up at 12 o'clock, heading over to Sabres Live. But we got one more segment here, so if you want to join, you can do so. Zach Jones and Josh Mitten here at 12 o'clock, and you're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Mitten here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Just a few more minutes here until we get you over to Sabres Live. I am currently watching a video of all of Allen's touchdown passes against the Miami Dolphins.
I watched that 2 breaks ago, and I love it. It's also fun to figure out who the passes are to.
Yep.
Because I watched it with no audio. See, and I'm trying to like figure out who everyone is, all the changes in numbers, because I'm like, oh, there's 11, that's Cole Beasley. No, that's not Cole Beasley.
I'm watching it more of like, oh, wow, he has really changed his throwing motion. I do this like once a year, and it's usually in the offseason of like watching Allen's like career highlights, and of course, more get added. So I'm watching each season. And I'm watching the earlier season. You know, John Brown has a number of these in the 2019 season, really alone.
Mm-hmm.
But like watching also these years where I'm like, yeah, like it was sweet when they put up 30 points. Like that meant like Allen was efficient and all of this stuff was happening. And now,
and you're also remembering like what it felt like when, oh, Allen's getting better. He's arriving. He's here. Like,
we've hit the 2020 season in the video.
Yeah.
And like,
that's
and like,
the good one.
that's the Gabe Davis has a touchdown in this, which yep. I believe is his first one. It's a diving catch. They're down with about 5 minutes left in the game, 20-17. He catches a diving one. And then the John Brown moonshot is incredible. And then the arm wheel that Allen does. That's close to the game that I realized he had ascended. It's I believe the next week against 2 weeks later against Vegas, where I was like, okay, he's legit now. But my goodness, I know the games have become now more closer. Most of them have become closer games, mm-hmm. where before it was just blowout after blowout after blowout.
There was one highlight
in there. Just annihilates these
and
guys.
I was confused because, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was not Dawson Knox, but number 88 caught the touchdown. It was early in the video.
Yes, 2018.
Probably.
Well, now I'm gonna have to find that out.
And I'm trying to do it without looking it up, but I can't remember who it is.
I want to say Jason Kroom, but I could be wrong about that. I feel like that's a. I'm gonna.
Kroom was 80.
Oh, I was. I had a feeling he was 80, but I just took a guess.
Maybe it was a zero, and I'm just maybe. I don't know. Maybe I didn't see it right, but. Do you find any other 88s?
Zero was.
No, eight like. Seeing the zero as an eight, I think I miss.
Oh, but yeah, watching these highlights, yeah. I have. I mean, me and you have talked about it because we were young guys. We don't have the 90s, but watching that rivalry become a thing has been awesome to watch. That's going to do it for me and Josh. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10 to 12 for another edition of the Extra Point Show. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live with the Prospect Challenge beginning on Friday. This is WGR.